Welcome to Absolute Legends on Atlantic Radio Ireland. Welcome to episode 2 of Absolute Legends. The subject of today's episode is going to be Ireland's greatest mythological warrior, Satanta, and how he came to be known as Cú Chulainn. Now, just before we get into the story today, I'd like to make an apology for an error in the story. You'll hear me referring to Satanta's mother, Conor McNessa's sister, as Dechtna. It turns out it's actually Dechtura. There's an R rather than an N in her name, but I hand-wrote my notes for this week's episode and my handwriting is awful, so I confused those two letters and I repeat it a number of times throughout the episode, so sorry if that ruins it for you, hopefully not. So we'll get straight into it and I'll talk to you again after the story. So we'll start with the birth of Satanta. How he was conceived is pretty much anyone's guess. There's a number of different stories regarding his conception and his actual lineage too, but for this story's sake, we'll go with the most straightforward version, kind of a combination of two or three of the tales, just picking out the bits that kind of make chronological sense. So, first of all, there was the King of Ulster, Chochur Mac Nessa. Now, if I'm going to keep calling him by that name, you're probably going to get fed up of the sound of me clearing my throat saying Chochur. So we'll go with the more modern version of his name, which would be Conor. He's Conor Mac Nessa. It makes it easier for me to pronounce so we get through the story a little more easily. Now, Conor Mac Nessa was the King of Ulster, and he lived in a fort called Owen Macha, which is near where Armagh is today. One weekend, himself and his buddies decided they were going to head off on a hunting trip. Now, I'm not sure if it was a real hunting trip. It sounds like more an excuse to get out of the house for a few days, and they were probably going on the lash because what they claimed to be hunting was a flock of magic birds, which sounds a bit suspect, don't you think? Among the group going on the hunt was Conor's sister. Again, another name that's a bit unusual, and there's a few different pronunciations I've heard of it, but it could be Dechtna or Dechtna or Dechtna. We'll go with Dechtna. It's a nice, easy way of saying it. And that's the point now where we're actually going to kick into the story proper. So, Conor, his sister, and all of his buddies are going off hunting for some magic birds.
God, Dechtna, have you no friends of your own?
Oh, stop trying to be the big man, Conor. They're my friends too.
Fine, you can come. But don't be chatting any of them up this time. It's really embarrassing, you know.
It's not my fault if they all fancy me.
Off they set on their hunt, leaving Owen Macha early in the morning with the intention of returning just before nightfall. They packed light, they didn't carry any extra provisions, and they didn't bring any camping equipment. This turned out to be a terrible mistake because they were utterly unprepared for the sudden snowstorm that enveloped them while they were in the hills. They desperately needed to find shelter, so when they happened upon a small farm dwelling in the midst of the snow, they begged to be let inside.
Hello? Hello? Is there anybody there?
Just a minute!
Oh, come on.
For God's sake, what's keeping him?
Oh, come on, come on, come on.
Coming! I will be just 2 seconds.
Sorry, I was just hoovering the toilet. Okay. Listen, we've got ourselves into a bit of a situation. We were out hunting, and we've gotten caught up in all of the snow without any tents or provisions, so we were kind of hoping you'd let us inside.
Yes. Well, I hope you'll understand, but I'm a little bit wary about letting strangers into the house. There have been stories in the paper lately about fellows going around pretending to be from the gas company and then robbing people blind.
Well, sir, I can assure you, you have nothing to fear from us. I'm Conor Mac Nessa. I'm your king.
Oh, I see. Well, let me stop you there now, because at the last election, the party I voted for would not be very fond of kings, if you know what I mean. So maybe you should head down the street and try one of my neighbours instead.
Oh, seriously? I'm not here canvassing for votes. I'm the king. These are the Red Branch Knights, and we just want to get inside your house.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You've brought soldiers with you as well? I'm sorry, friend, but unless you have a warrant, I don't have to let you inside this door.
Oh my God! What part of this are you not getting? I'm not looking for votes. I'm not trying to rob you. I'm not raiding your house. We really just need to get indoors to take shelter until this storm passes. Look, my poor sister's nearly frozen to death. Do you understand?
When the man saw Detna, shivering with her body hunched over against the wind and her lips turning blue, he took pity on the group and finally allowed them inside his modest home.
I'm sorry about all of the confusion earlier, but I don't really have people calling to me often, and sometimes I think maybe the loneliness of living up on this mountain has driven me a bit mad, too.
Aye, you can say that again.
Sorry?
Oh, nothing. Listen, I was just wondering if I could have another cup of that whiskey there.
Oh, no problem, my friend. Just say when. Or maybe I will just stop pouring. That's quite a lot of whiskey you have there. And I wouldn't mind having a drop for myself, too, you know? We'll share it around a little.
With no sign of the snowstorm relenting, the group realised they were going to be stuck at that farmhouse overnight. But luckily for them, they had found themselves a very generous host. The owner of the little cottage provided a generous supply of food, wine and beer to his visitors, all the while keeping a blazing fire burning for their comfort. The atmosphere in the little cottage had become relaxed and friendly. The tension that had initially been present had long since evaporated, and the farmer was clearly beginning to enjoy the company. But it was the company of Detna, the king's sister, that he seemed to take the most joy in. And it certainly wasn't a one-sided affair, because Detna was equally taken by the host. The two of them had really hit it off. So much so, in fact, that as the night wore on, the food was all eaten and the fire had burnt down to mere glowing embers. Detna suggested accompanying the man to his bed. The following morning, the sun was shining brightly through the crisp, frosty air. The snow had not thawed, but at least it had stopped falling. Connor summoned his party to commence the journey back to Owen Maca.
Come on, lads!
Oh my God, my head is thumping. How strong was that whiskey? I reckon we stop for one on the way home. You know, it'll take the edge off hair of the dog and all that.
Where's Detna? Come on, like, we need to be off.
She's just saying goodbye to her fella, I'd say. She'll be along in a minute.
Connor! Connor!
Aye, what is it, Detna?
Something's wrong. My stomach, it's all swollen.
Ah, that'll be all the bread you were eating last night. It's very bloating, you know. Can kind of have a bit of an effect on you. Now, will you come on?
No, it's not that. It's...
You are carrying my child.
What? But, look away. Should we only met last night?
Well, yes, but full disclosure. I'm actually Lug, one of the ancient gods of the Tuatha De Danann, and I chose you, Detna, to be the mother of my son.
What? But I thought you said you had protection.
Indeed. I have a very sharp sword and the finest shield in all of Erin. As much protection as any good man could wish for.
No, you f***ing numpty. Ah, it doesn't even make sense. How can it be happening so fast?
Well, like most things in stories that fail to make sense, the answer is usually magic. By the way, you're due in about 30 seconds, and I've got to be off back to the Netherworld, so see ya.
What? He's gone? Just like that? What am I supposed to... Oh my God, it's coming!
Detna gave birth to a boy right there and then in the middle of the little hut. Nobody really knew what to do next. They knew that if Detna returned to Owen Maca with a baby, the princess would be deemed unmarriageable and the scandal could cause upheaval in the royal court. Detna herself was distraught. She had not expected to get pregnant, and with the added shock of a 12-hour gestation period, she had certainly not had the opportunity to come to terms with the scenario. It was then that someone suggested that the child be reared in Dundalk by the poet Amargan and his wife Finchom. They had raised four fine sons, so they were the best candidates to act as foster parents for the lad.
Hang on now, one bloody second,
piped up Amargan.
If I arrive home with a baby, the missus will go off her bloody head. We only just got the last fella out of the house, and we're all prepared for enjoying our retirement. I just got myself a new set of golf clubs, and herself is after putting a treadmill and an exercise bike into the spare bedroom. A further debate kicked off, and it was only resolved when Murren suggested a compromise whereby the baby would live with Amargan and his wife, but that each of the knights and Connor would share the role of fatherhood. Each one would assume responsibility for a different aspect of the boy's upbringing. Seneca would teach him morality and judgment, Fergus would teach him his martial arts skills and how to protect the weak, and the wealthiest of them, Bly Brugge, would ensure that there was always enough money at Amargan's disposal to provide for the boy, and so on and so on. At this point, the story kind of fizzles out for a while, and the only other detail we're really given is that the boy is named Setanta. And even that's hardly worth remembering because he ends up getting a new name about two chapters into the story anyway. Some years later, when Setanta was still very young, he decided that he wanted to go to Auenmacha to join the youth division of the Red Branch Knights. His foster parents were totally against the idea because they thought that he was just too young. I mean, he was only 5 years of age. But then he threatened to throw a tantrum, and they backed down immediately. You see, even at 5 years of age, Amargan and Fincombe had realised that there was something a bit off about young Setanta. That'll all get explained a bit more later, so just keep that bit in mind. Anyway, the little fella took off down the road with just his come on and slither to keep him company on the long journey from Dundalk to Armagh. Now I realise, for international listeners maybe not familiar with the language, sports or geography of Ireland, I've said a few things in that sentence that might need clearing up. So first of all, the distance from Dundalk to Armagh that this 5-year-old child was about to walk on his own is, okay, according to Google Maps, about 30 miles and a 9.5-hour walk for an adult. So that's the first thing to keep in mind. And then I also referred to the words come on and slither. So we'll explain those next. These are two of the main tools involved in the sport of hurling. Now, if you're not familiar with hurling, it's a sport that has existed in Ireland in some shape or form for almost 2,000 years. And the easiest way to describe it is to say that it's probably a cross between field hockey and a war crime. The players, usually 15 per team, aim to score goals and points by hitting a small ball called a slither between a set of goalposts using a stick, which is variously referred to as a come on, a hurl, or a hurley. You'll actually hear quite a few references to hurling in Irish mythology because it was often used as a training exercise to prepare young men for combat. The skills that they developed with the stick were largely transferable to sword fighting on a battlefield, and the large numbers of players on both teams simulated a melee, you know, face-to-face combat type environment. The sport was notoriously violent and dangerous in its early days, so much so that if you look at passages from the Brehon Laws, there are entire chapters dedicated to the types of punishments and reparations that would have to be paid should you maim or murder someone in the middle of a game of hurling. Now, obviously, in the modern era, things have become much safer and more regulated. Grappling, for example, was removed from the rulebook as a legal technique sometime in the late 19th century. And in 2009, it finally became compulsory that all players had to wear helmets. Now keep in mind, this is a sport where 30 men swing wooden clubs at each other. And it was 2009 they decided to introduce compulsory helmets. So these guys are tough. Anyway, back to the story. Setanta eventually arrived at Auenmacha and saw the cadets in the middle of a game of hurling. His excitement got the better of him and he ran straight onto the pitch. This, in Armagh, would be considered somewhat of a faux pas. Here, here, pass it to me, pass it to me, pass me the ball. Here, here, pass it to me, pass it to me.
Who the hell are you?
I'm Setanta. Now, pass me the ball. I bet I can score from here. I'm a class hurler, I'm a class hurler. Pass it to me, pass me, I'll score from here. I swear to God, I'm class, I'm pure class at hurling.
I don't care who you are, short ass. Don't just run onto our pitch without asking for our protection first.
No, I'm grand for protection. It's fine, it's fine. Come on, let's get on with the match. Seriously, you should see how good I am, how far I can hit the ball and everything. I'm pure class, like.
I don't think he's getting the message.
Aye, well, maybe we need to help him to understand it.
The boys began to shove and punch at Setanta, the beating intended as a punishment for entering this gang's turf without their consent.
The violence was short-lived, however, because just as Satanta was about to lose his temper, Connor stepped in.
What the bloody hell is going on here?
They just started baiting me for no reason, like.
No way, sir. He started it.
Shut up. I don't care who started it. I'm finishing it. Now, for God's sake, he's only a wee lad. You lot, shove off, play somewhere else. Now, you, what business do you have coming here?
I just wanted to join in. I'm your nephew, Satanta, and I only came up here so I could train to be one of your knights.
Oh, crap. I knew that knight would come back to haunt me.
Connor brought Satanta inside the fort and summoned the other boys too. He explained to them that Satanta, not being from the area, was unfamiliar with their customs and deserved an apology for how he had been treated. With their eyes downcast, the boys offered half-hearted handshakes and mumbled apologies just like you'd see after a playground argument.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry too. Yeah. Sorry.
Grand. So it's sorted now. We're all friends again now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
No f***ing way!
What did you just say? Oh. My. God.
Remember I told you earlier that there was something a bit off about Satanta? Well, here it comes. You see, Satanta was a bit like the Incredible Hulk. You wouldn't like him when he's angry. When Satanta's temper got the better of him, he experienced something called a riastrad, which has been translated a number of different ways, including the word torque, or even the cooler-sounding warp spasm. Effectively, it means that he would transform into a gigantic, hideous beast, utterly unrecognisable as the person he had been mere moments before. And just like the Hulk, he became a creature utterly consumed with rage. He was as likely to lash out at a friend as he was at a foe. So then, Hulk-mode Satanta began to chase the other boys through the fort, firing furniture and masonry at them as they ran. He roared that now they must seek his protection. Needless to say, once they realised that that's all they had to do to placate him and stop him having this freakout, they were all very quick to beg for his mercy. Having witnessed all of this, Connor realised that he would need to keep quite a close eye on Satanta. One day, Connor received an invitation to a feast at the home of Cullen, Ulster's master weaponsmith. Now he was eager to placate the powerful lobby groups like the National Spear Association and responsible sword owners of Ulster, so Connor accepted the invitation. He was, however, acutely aware of the risks involved in leaving Satanta unsupervised for a whole night, so he decided to bring his nephew along as his guest.
Satanta, come inside now and get yourself washed up. We're getting ready to leave.
Uncle Connor, we're in the middle of a game. I'm 75-0 up against those farty lads over there, and it's the first to 100 wins. Can I just finish the match up first?
Satanta, I have a taxi booked. He'll be here in 10 minutes.
That's grand. I'll walk away down once I'm done. I'll walk over there. I'll be fine.
He lives 10 miles away.
Surely you haven't forgotten the fact that as a 5-year-old, I walk here on my own from Dundalk.
You've got me there. Okay, fair enough. But look, come straight down after the match and please don't kill any of the other boys while I'm away. I don't want to be dealing with their parents.
So Connor set off for the feast, leaving Satanta to finish his game with his friends, I guess you'd call them. They were all terrified of him, so I don't think they were really his friends, to be honest, but anyway. When Connor and his entourage arrived at Cullen's house, they were quickly ushered inside the building. The security guards slammed and barred the heavy gates behind them.
Ah, King Connor, I've been expecting you.
Yeah, listen, thanks for having us over, but is all that security crack really necessary? Seems a bit over the top to me.
Oh no, not at all, Your Highness. You know what the conspiracy nuts are like? One hint of us meeting and it'll be all over Twitter. Hashtag dodgy deals, hashtag new world order, hashtag arms for influence, etc, etc. One can never be too careful, which is exactly why I have this fella too.
Oh my god! I thought that was a sofa.
Aye, he's a grand big specimen indeed, isn't he? I raised this beast from a pup. And while he wouldn't dare show a tooth to me, he'd gladly rip a trespasser limb from limb.
Now, please, let my staff here show you to the dining room while I tie Tiny here up outside the gates, and I'll be with you in a second.
The feast was mighty crack, and Connor and his knights made the most of the plentiful supply of fine food and even finer ales. He was having such a good time that he managed to forget completely about the fact that Satanta was supposed to follow him to the party. That was until he heard the sound of Cullen's monstrous wolfhound barking and snarling beyond the gates. Oh, Jesus. Satanta. He'll be ripped apart. Connor got up from the table and sprinted to the door. He was followed closely behind by his men and all of Cullen's clansmen. Fearing the worst, Connor sprinted to the ramparts of the fort, arriving just in time to see the massive hound darting towards Satanta. He was about to call out a warning when he realised that his nephew had already spotted the danger and had begun his own transformation from man to beast. The creature that was Satanta stared directly into the eyes of the approaching hound, then rolled his schlitter along the ground in front of him. The hound was nearly upon him. Two more of his slobbering, snarling bones and he would be able to sink his enormous fangs into Satanta's flesh. Just then, in a movement as fast as a flash of lightning, Satanta flicked the schlitter off the ground with his come on and drove it straight at the hound. The hard leather ball went straight into the hound's mouth and down its throat. The hound's gigantic paws struck the soil once, propelling him forward still. They struck a second time, barely a yard from where Satanta was standing. This time, however, instead of pushing the beast into its final deadly pounce, the hound's legs buckled beneath its great mass. Its fearsome body crashed to the ground and landed in a crumpled heap at Satanta's feet.
Is he after culling that dog?
Aye, I'd say he has and all.
Right, well, get the checkbook, I suppose. Listen, Cullen, I'm fair sorry about that. The young lad has a bit of a temper on him, and I'm happy to pay for a new dog for you.
No amount of money could replace that dog. He was the finest pedigree, and 6 years of the best training went into him. Now he's dead. He's dead because of you. You? What? Me what? What? Sorry, lads, sorry, I'm late. I was on my way over. A big fucking dog outside attacked me. Just went for me, like. Just went for you. You bloody animal. You just slaughtered my pride and joy, a perfectly good guard dog.
Ah, he wasn't that good now, in fairness. Sure, there isn't a scratch on me, like. Satanta, a word, please.
Connor took Satanta aside and explained as well as he could the possible negative political implications of such an incident and insisted that Satanta make amends for killing the dog.
Ah, sure, I know what'll put this right. Look, until you manage to rear and train another pup, I'll be your bodyguard. I'll take the hound's place. How does that sound?
You're Cullen's hound now, Satanta. Coo Cullen has a good ring to it, hasn't it?
What the f*** did you just call me?
Oh no, here we go again.
Well, that brings us to the end of this week's chapter of Absolute Legends. Thanks very much for listening. And feel free to get in touch with the show. Like I said in last week's episode, you can contact me on legends@atlanticradio.ie. So any comments, tips, any feedback you'd like to give, that's more than welcome, including commentary about the type of stories we're covering. Last week's episode was about Finn McCool, and we got some interesting ones in there about that. But there's one in particular, actually, that I'd like to note. It's from a friend of mine, I must admit. But he points out the fact that there's a very similar story to Finn McCool and the Salmon of Knowledge. In the Germanic Volsunga saga, it tells the story of Sigurd, who slays a dragon called Fafnir and is told to cook its heart, but not taste its flesh. And when he's cooking it, he, of course, burns his tongue, sticks it in his mouth, and receives all of the knowledge in the world and the language of the birds, apparently. So a very similar trope there in Germanic culture. You'll see this in a lot of the Norse cultures as well. A lot of these stories transferred back and forth, so there's a nice historical link to those there too. Anyway, I'm probably getting a bit boring now, so it's time for us to wrap up the show. Like I said, get in touch on legends@atlanticradio.ie, and you'll be hearing from me again next week. Bye now.